Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and today we have a very, very cool interview with the authors of the new book, Slayers and Vampires, a unauthorized, uncensored oral history of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. I'm so glad they included Angel because, as most of you all know, I like Angel better than Buffy. So it's good to see the vampire with a soul getting a little bit of love. Mark Altman and Edward Gross are the authors. They also did a series of books on Star Trek, an oral history of Star Trek, split into two humongous volumes, which we are going to talk a little bit about since this is the 30th anniversary of Next Gen, and we have the new show Discovery starting out to a lot of viewers and chatter. The fact that it broke records for the most pirated episode of television ever, given what records Game of Thrones had been setting, pretty impressive, pretty darn impressive. So we will chat with Mark and Ed just in a bit. If you are going to New York Comic Con, October 5th through 8th, they will be there. They will have a Star Trek panel, a Buffy panel, and be signing their books in the signing room or the dealer room. I'm not sure which. So if you're going to New York Comic Con, stop by, say hi, tell them Summer sent you from Slice of Sci-Fi. And with that, we'll get right on into the interview. Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guests with me now are Edward Gross and Mark Altman, the authors of the brand new Slayers and Vampires, an unauthorized oral history of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Summer. Thanks for having us. We're really excited. You know, the book came out on Tuesday, so you're one of the first people we've talked to since the book actually hit the stores or hit Amazon or and all those places
anywhere
people get books now.
Anywhere people can obtain quality reading material. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Short of Borders books, that won't be happening. But it's exciting. It's 20th anniversary of Buffy, and you know, on the day we're talking, it's the 30th anniversary of Star Trek: The Next Generation. A lot of occasions to make us feel very old today.
Yeah, I know. It's because there's just so much out there. I saw that it's also the 20th anniversary of Starship Troopers, the movie. And I was like, really?
Yes, that's right. We could talk about that.
Anniversaries everywhere.
I love Starship Troopers.
Oh, my gosh. So, Slayers and Vampires, the world that Joss Whedon created, starting with Buffy the Vampire Slayer and expanding outward to create a whole world. How did you two get attached to this universe? What was it, from a fan perspective or just a pop culture perspective?
Well, I mean, you know, my attachment began. I was a journalist for Cinescape magazine, and they announced that Joss Whedon was writing Alien Resurrection back in '95. So I said to myself, how many Joss Whedons could there be in a phone book? So I looked up the phone book, and sure enough,
you know,
Joss Whedon's
book
name
is,
and number.
It's a big book with telephone numbers in it.
Yeah, I forget how long ago it's been since. So anyway, so I found Joss's number in the phone book and called him up and did an interview with him about Alien Resurrection, then about his career, then about this terrible movie called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And then when they announced Buffy the Vampire Slayer as a series, I'd already had the connection with Joss, so we continued it. And from there, he put me in touch with other people from the show, and that's sort of how I discovered Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
And you talked to Joss for many, many years, and yeah. What was it he said to you? I always love that.
Yeah, we spoke for years, like a couple of times a year throughout Buffy, throughout Angel, Dollhouse, everything. And I thanked him for always making time for me. And his response was, Ed, you were saying my stuff was important before anybody else was, and I'll never forget that. And Joss never did forget that until the Avengers. Then it was over. Haven't spoken to Joss since the Avengers, so there you go.
Yeah, and I wanted to say to your audience, by the way, I don't normally sound like this. I have a terrible cold right now, so you'll have to forgive me for the nasal quality of my voice. But at least you don't have to look at us on video, so there you go.
That's perfectly fine. So, Mark, how about you? How did you get attached to the Buffyverse?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I came to the party pretty late. The show had been on for many years, and I think I had avoided it because of the silly moniker, the Buffy the Vampire name, and I'd seen the movie in the theaters and didn't particularly like the feature, so I wasn't that interested. But actually had gotten an invitation, of all things, to the wrap party for Buffy. So we went. My wife and I went to the wrap party for Buffy season 7, and but we didn't know anything about the show. We had a great time, and we both looked at each other and we said, "You know, we probably should watch the show. Everyone says it's so good." And I, you know, and Angel was just, you know, was also still on the air, and so we ended up, you know, buying the DVDs. And we, you know, I think that was the first show we ever binged. I mean, we started watching it, totally fell in love with it, and just became huge Buffy fans. And then, of course, started devouring, you know, Angel after that as well, which is, as we've talked about, is sort of the Deep Space Nine of the Buffy franchise. It's a show that never got the kind of kudos and accolades of the original, and maybe much attention, but in many ways is as good, if not better, than the show that inspired it, much as Deep Space Nine was to Next Generation, Angel is to Buffy. And, you know, it also had its ups and downs early on, but then really found its identity and just achieved, you know, so much worthwhile. And that's why it was really great, important to Ed and I to showcase Angel in the book and not just have Buffy. And so the book deals with, you know, Buffy, and it's probably the most in-depth anyone has ever been about Angel. And I think there's just some amazing material there. And I can say that because the Angel section was largely written by Ed, and he just did a remarkable job.
Well, I will have to thank you both, because I am a huge Angel fan. I was actually, I liked Buffy, but Angel came along and it actually blew me away. It impressed me more than Buffy did. I like them both, but if I had to sit down and rewatch an entire season of one, I would probably choose Angel over Buffy. There's maybe, I'm going to say, 5 to 10 episodes of Buffy that I would rewatch at the drop of a hat, but I would watch season 1 and season 2 of Angel straight through if I wanted to.
I'm with
to.
You. I'm with you right there.
Yeah, it's just...
Well, it's interesting because if you look, you know, the high point for Buffy, I think, is indisputably, you know, season 1, especially 2 and 3 being the highlights. And then you have some great episodes in 4. You have, you know, season 5 has some really strong episodes. 6 has, you know, one or two great episodes like the musical. And then, of course, 7 is you know, has a few good episodes. But, you know, it really, Buffy, it's the first couple of seasons that resonate. And that's what we remember so vividly. And whereas Angel starts off fairly weakly, but then starts to find its identity in, you know, season 2 and 3. And I remember when they said for season 4, for the final season, that, you know, Angel joins an evil law firm in Los Angeles, you know, and I'm just like, oh my God, this is going to be horrible. This sounds like, you know, just, you know, and arguably it's the best season of all of them, you know, and it's just remarkable what they did with less money and just the restrictions of, you know, taking it to Wolfram and Hart and doing that. And it's just, you know, so remarkable. And it's just such a bizarre show where they seemingly could do anything. And I think they had a lot less restrictions because, you know, the ratings weren't sensational. I think they were getting a lot less notes. And it was just like, the show's just bizarre. Do whatever you want. And, you know, that worked to its advantage. I mean, I know Ed, right? Ben Edlin talks about how, you know, the opportunities on
He totally, Angel. Ben, who joined the show in season 5, you know, wrote Smile Time, let's never forget that, turned Angel into a puppet. you know, he summed it up great. I mean, there's two things about Angel. One is the fact that that show put a leading man through things and made him take actions that were just incredibly against what you would normally do with your hero, taking him to dark places, and somehow the audience forgave him and stuck with him. That's the first big thing about the character of Angel. I mean, locked lawyers in a room, a wine cellar with vampires to be devoured, basically. But then Ben Edlin pointed out that with the craziness of Angel is that in season 4, you have a vampire go into a dimension where humans can't live to talk to a crab man to get the name of a goddess who is taking over the earth so he can stop her. What kind of vampire show is that? That's the most insane vampire show that's ever existed. And they pulled it off every mm-hmm. time.
Yeah, season 5 I thought was a brilliant turn because you're sitting there wondering, okay, they're defeating a goddess from another dimension from enslaving the entire earth. Where do you go from there? Oh, you have the senior partners reward them for ending peace on earth by giving them the Los Angeles franchise of the law firm. The looks on their faces were, wait, we ended world peace? Yeah, you did. We're thanking you for that. That was
it's your gift.
I thought that was the most brilliant fistful of backhand ever. It's like, yeah, thank you for ending world peace so we could continue to mess with the earth. Love ya.
And ultimately, and they gave Wolfram and Hart what they were going in anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and also what they reinvented the characters. I mean, what they did, you know, certainly with Wesley, you know, who was sort of this chicken coward lead character in Buffy comic relief, you know, how he really becomes this sort of ass kicking deep character in Angel is remarkable. And then, you know, of course, you know, the return of Spike, which also seemed like a complete publicity ratings ploy, and how nuanced and what a wonderful job James Marsters did in Angel. I mean, he's just phenomenal. So it's just so much was done well. And even the deepening of Cordelia, you know, who also was a certain kind of character on Buffy, and then what they ended up doing with her getting the visions, you know, after Glenn Quinn leaves the show, and it's so smart. And so many talented people came out of that show, showrunners and writers and producers, and it's really a show that deserves to have more of a light shown on it. You know, I think that Buffy, you know, you look at any of these 50 greatest TV shows of all time, Buffy is likely to show up on it. Angel is not, and you know, it certainly warrants more consideration than it's gotten over the years.
Yes, I am a fan. Like I said, Buffy was so impactful on a lot of different areas outside of science fiction and fantasy that there was a series of academic conferences on it. The only other show that I know of, current, like modern TV show that had an academic conference related to it, was Babylon 5, another favorite of mine. And the fact that Angel went deeper into several other aspects of just life in general and it is sort of glossed over, I don't know, just hurts a little bit, because I think, like I said, I think that was a better show. I thought Buffy was good. I thought Angel was great. I thought Firefly was perfect. It was just like a progression of storytelling overall in the, I guess, what was it, 97 to 2002, I guess, all three of them were on.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, just rest assured that oversight has been remedied in our book. We have addressed the oversight with Angel. And, you know, I would say regarding Babylon 5, I think the reason that it hasn't maybe stood the test of time as well as other genre shows, you know, has to do with, you know, it was really on the cusp of those kind of Amiga visual effects. And I think because the visual effects have not dated very well, and because it's something that doesn't easily make the leap to high def, mm-hmm. It just doesn't get the kind of exposure. I mean, because, you know, obviously Babylon 5 was doing some very deep and interesting storytelling at the time as well, which is another show I covered extensively for CineFantastic. And, you know, it just felt sort of through this crack as TV was evolving in terms of the way it was made. And, you know, Babylon 5 was also made very cheaply. So, you know, it's unfortunately, I think with streaming and stuff, you just don't have, you know, widescreen versions of the show, and the special effects are dated. But it's unfortunate because, you know, some of the stories are among some of the best stuff that's ever, mm-hmm. you know, been done on a science fiction TV show.
And I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think the lifeblood of any science fiction show and its fandom is how easily people catch on to it in reruns. And Babylon 5 never had the rerun syndication rerun anywhere. that Buffy does and that Angel does. And I think if Babylon 5 were in reruns someplace where, because you can, there's like five different channels running all of the Star Treks now. You can find Star Trek. You can find Buffy. I think Buffy and Angel are still on both Hulu and Netflix. There's only one place now that you can find Babylon 5, but you couldn't get it anywhere for at least the past 7 years. And that's going to hurt.
And Babylon 5 was also heavily serialized. So at the time, syndicated shows were usually shows that weren't that serialized. And so that it missed sort of this window. And like I said, I think the fact that now it's tough because none of the streaming platforms want it because, you know, the effects are so dated. And, you know, I think it was 133. I don't think it was shot in widescreen. And so, it's hard. You don't see it on a Netflix or, you know, in repeats. Or I think it's on a streaming platform, Go 90 right now. But I think that's the only place you can really find it. And then it was never released on Blu-ray either. I mean, it's only on DVD.
Yeah,
I mean, even Fox with Buffy recently remastered the Buffy episodes for widescreen, which I know Joss was against because he wasn't involved. It's sort of what they did with X-Files, except with X-Files, I think Chris Carter was involved in the remastering. And so I think Joss sort of disowns that. That's why they've never released him on Blu-ray. I mean, for the 20th anniversary, I mean, Buffy still only exists on DVD. So anyway.
Yeah, because I think neither Buffy nor Angel is on Blu-ray, but Firefly is now out on a remastered version, so I don't know.
Yeah,
don't...
well, Firefly was made later, and it was already shot widescreen. The special effects are certainly, you know, obviously it's 10 years. Well, it's a little bit later because it was being, you know, at the end of Buffy's run, because I think Buffy, you know, at the end went to widescreen once it went to UPN. Mm-hmm. This was right as TV was changing from sort of 133 to 185. I don't remember offhand, but there's so many shows that have fallen through these cracks. Babylon 5 is a good example of that. I mean, what's wonderful is you see Deep Space Nine really being rediscovered right now, you know, thanks to the ubiquitousness of Star Trek on all these streaming platforms.
Well, if you guys ever hear about a remastered version of Angel, let me know, okay? Now, in addition to this complete, uncensored, unauthorized oral history of Buffy and Angel, you guys also did two volumes on Star Trek, the first 25 years of Star Trek and the second 25 years of Star Trek, which was also done in this oral history format, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
How long did it take for all three of these books? Because that's a lot of interviews to do and to dissect and to split up, because each of these, I should explain for our listeners, each of these chapters is broken up by either topic or particular episode, and you go through, you know, two dozen different people getting their thoughts and their memories about a situation or a storyline or a plot. And it's just fascinating that, A, they remember all this stuff so many years later, and just to be able to sit down in conversation with these people and say, hey, this was a milestone for an entire generation. Tell us how that makes you feel. How does that affect you?
It was interesting. The backstory on these books is interesting. I got to go back a little bit because, I mean, it was approaching the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, and Ed had approached me, and, you know, we'd both written extensively about Star Trek over the years, back when I was a journalist before I was doing television, and then Ed continues to be a very, you know, well-known journalist. And he said, let's, you know, do something for the 50th. And I kept turning him down and saying I wasn't interested in going back and revisiting this. And then he said to me, come on, 50th anniversary is coming up. If not now, when? And it was fortunate because just at that time I had read these two oral histories, an oral history of Saturday Night Live called Live from New York and history of MTV, oral history of MTV called I Want My MTV. And I just fell so in love with the oral history format, the way it allowed people to, share their stories in their own words and from different perspectives. And I called up Ed, and there was sort of a chink in the door, and I said, you know, maybe I would consider possibly doing this if we pitched it as an oral history. And Ed jumped on that and talked to our agent, and then she sort of went out and pitched it, and before I knew it, we had, you know, this big deal to do the book, and I don't think I had ever said yes, but at that point, the train had left the station, and so we did the book, and, you know, most of it is new interviews, but at the same time, you know, Ed and I had both been covering Star Trek for many decades, so especially for people who had passed away, we were able to go back and look at our material. I mean, I had been on the set of Next Generation since literally the first season. You know, I think my first set visit was when the week that Code of Honor was airing, and I was there for too short a season, and then was there every season since. And then Ed had been covering Star Trek since the original, and you know, the book was supposed to be one book, but there was such a wealth of material, and we were so passionate, we suddenly realized we had this, you know, like 2,000-page manuscript. And we told our editor, we said, we really think it needs to be two books. And he was very circumspect about it. Said, I'll be the judge of that. And he sent in the book, and he read it. And then we just got this email back that said, it's now two books. And that was that. And so it became two books, which was great, because we would have had to basically eviscerate it to get it to fit as one book. And shortly thereafter, they said, you know, look, the book's, you know, a big success, and we love it, and we want to stay in business with you. And is there anything else you want to cover? And I said, no, I'm done. Star Trek was my thing. And Ed said, well, you know, next year is the 20th anniversary of Buffy. And I'm like, wow, maybe Buffy. And so we ended up, you know, I got kicking and screaming doing the book, and we had the greatest time doing it. And I'm, you know, really proud of the book, and, you know, being able to tell the real story, you know, in people's own words. And that's the joy of, again, the oral history format, but also the fact that, you know, we were able to tap into so many relationships we have with people, people who normally wouldn't talk for these kind of books. I mean, literally, you know, I mean, I'd be on the set of Librarians where, you know, I was co-executive producer and say, hey, Christian, you know, between takes, you know, I'm writing this history of Buffy and Angel. You know, would you be able to do an interview? And he's like, yeah, sure, Mark, whatever, whatever you need. And, you know, I put him in touch with Ed. And, you know, one episode I had Sean Astin doing a show for me called Tears of a Clown. And I said to Sean, hey, I know you directed an episode of Angel. You want to talk to me for the book? And he said, yeah, sure, whatever you want, Mark. And then Felicia Day was, you know, it's like, so it was, you know, just a wonderful thing. And, you know, it just took on a life of its own. And, you know, if anyone is able to cultivate relationships over the years, it's been Ed Gross, who just, it just seems like he does an interview with somebody 25 years ago. And then, you know, I'll be at Comic-Con and he runs into them and they say hi. And he says, I'm Ed Gross, because he normally does phoners. And they're like he's a long lost brother. They're like, throw their arms around. Ed Gross. Oh my God. And it's just amazing.
Well,
he's able to accomplish to
it. It's easy for Mark to say, but I know everywhere we go, people know him. It's like he's greeted by people everywhere.
Well, but they like you, Ed. They know me.
Oh, is that the difference? Okay. That's the difference. Now, you know, it's great, though, because you establish these relationships. Mark and I both have. And, you know, you come to them and say, we're doing what we hope is the definitive look at a subject, whether it was Buffy, whether it was Angel, whatever, or Star Trek, whatever it was. And what you found is in most cases, these people were willing to spend, over the course of several days, hours on the phone. I mean, James Marsters probably spent about 3 or 4 hours talking to me for this book. And on Star Trek, you know, like Ron Moore, for instance, I'd say about 12 hours on the phone in total talking about Star Trek with me.
Well, that's why these books are so deep, and why, you know, you know, people say, I can't believe, I thought I knew everything there is to know about Star Trek. I thought I knew everything there is to know about Buffy, but I learned so much from these books. And it's just because we take the time to really go past sort of the press release pablum and really, you know, understand and you know, explore these stories in much more depth. And I mean, I have to say, when, you know, I started reading Ed's interview with James Marsters, I was just like blown away by, you know, his recollections and the depth of it, and, you know, the stories and things I'd never heard before. And, you know, that was the case for so many people. But, you know, if you said who was the most interesting interview, in a way, I would immediately gravitate towards James, because I just thought he had so much great material, you know, in the book. And then, you know, with Star Trek, you know, there's so many great people, but certainly Ron Moore would be among, I think, you know, I thought the best interviews, you know, in the book. But there's just so many fantastic voices, you know, both big and small. Like, one of my favorite interviews that I did was the guy who had developed Star Trek The Next Generation before they brought on Roddenberry. there was a version of Star Trek: The Next Generation that had been developed by the studio, and it was really fascinating. And it was basically discarded when they finally brought Roddenberry on board, and he had never talked about it. And you know, I was able to sit him down at the late Kate Mandolini restaurant and spend an hour talking to him about what he had planned to do with Next Generation. And to me, that was like such a coup. And there's so many
major
of those
coup.
In the book, you know.
Wow. And I wish I had known about the Star Trek books last year. I would have definitely.
So do we.
Well, it's the 30th anniversary of Star Trek Next Generation, so it's not too late to jump back on that marketing train and get people interested in the book, because Next Generation is covered in the second book or the first book?
Second volume.
Second volume, okay. Well,
volume covers Next Gen, DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise, and the J.J. Abrams movies.
Yeah, and the first book is the original through Star Trek VI. So it's the first 25 years and the second 25 years, even though that isn't quite accurate, but it was a good way to brand them. And so they're both wonderful books. People say, which one do you prefer? And, you know, it depends what day of the week you ask me. There are days where I like the first book better and there are days where I like the second book better. But I do love them both, and I really felt they were a huge contribution to Star Trek scholarship, and it was really gratifying to hear the response that we got. I mean, in this, you know, raves from Publishers Weekly to the Wall Street Journal to Booklist, you know, and just it was really gratifying because we put our, you know, heart and soul into those books, and you know, we had no idea if there was an audience for them, because remember, I mean, you know, Star Trek Beyond came out and sort of bombed, and there, you know, it'd been a while since there'd been a Star Trek show on the air, and you know, we weren't sure, you know, how the books would do. And we really, more than anything, wanted them to be successful so people would read them because we had put so much work into them and we're so proud of them.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a perception with these oral histories that, you know, you're just grabbing a bunch of transcripts and throwing them together. But what we're really doing is weaving together a history from the perspectives, in the case of Star Trek, of probably close to 300 people. And, you know, over the course of tracking 50 years.
That's a good point. We're crafting a narrative. And what I say about the oral history format is it's like having a really great dinner party where you invite 500 or 600 of your closest friends, in this case, the people who made Buffy or the people who made Star Trek, and just have them talk and tell the story in a sort of linear fashion. But, you know, this is all taken from, you know, hundreds of interviews and, you know, thousands of hours of interviews. And, you know, having to craft a narrative that's compelling is really the challenge, which is why nothing makes me more frustrated than when I read, you know, oral history compiled by, and it's, you know, it's not compiled. I mean, you know, 99% of the interviews are new interviews we've done. And then, you know, we have to decide what we're going to use, what we're not going to use, or, you know, and how we're going to tell the story. So it's writing. It's not compiling. Compiling is very dismissive, and I'm not a fan of that expression.
Because you have to take a quote from somebody and figure out where in this the Star Trek manuscript between the two books was over 500,000 words, okay? Now, in crafting that, you have to look at a transcript of an interview you've done and say, okay, this one quote has to fit somewhere in this 500,000 words. You know what I mean?
And where does it go? And who else talks
about creating the flow.
And,
right.
Creating a narrative, you know, that's compelling. And so And that's why I just love the oral history format. It's a great format. And I think if we were ever to do any, you know, other books in the future, we would continue to embrace this oral history format because it's a great way to tell these stories. And, you know, as we said, particularly with Star Trek, the history of Star Trek, like Rashomon, everybody has a different opinion of what happened. And so it's a way for us not to weigh in on what happened, but rather give each person their own chance to tell the story. And in some cases, they tell completely different stories, and that's really what makes it interesting and compelling, I think.
Yeah. So I have a question. Is for the audiobook versions, are they including those voices of the actual interviewers, or is there somebody just reading their words?
No, there's somebody reading it. It's sort of funny because there's multiple people reading it. It actually, one of the people who was reading one of the Star Trek book was a guy who had actually worked on a show that I was an executive producer on called Agent X for TNT last year. And he calls me up and he says, oh, you'll never believe this. You know, I just read your audiobook for the audiobook. And, you know, I'm like, oh, that's great. And he said, yeah, but, you know, I wanted to call you because there were some words we didn't know how to pronounce. And I told them I knew you, and they wouldn't let me call. They say, you're not allowed to call the author. And, you know, sure enough, I hear the book and it's really well done, but there's like words like idic, which they pronounce IDIC, and, you know, a couple of other things where they mispronounce the words. If the guy had just called me for, 30 seconds, I could have answered all their questions, because it just makes me cringe every time I hear the mispronunciations. But, that's bureaucracy for you. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is. But I love the audiobooks. And in fact, I don't know if it's narcissism, but I've spent many an hour listening to the books. They're great for plane trips, or like, I know when I was going down to San Diego, I just threw on the book, and it had been long enough since we wrote it that I was able to just get wrapped up in it and enjoy it as though I had nothing to do with it. So that was gratifying.
And just thinking about it, because James Marsters does audiobook narration, so it would have been hilarious to have him read his own quotes in the Buffy Angel book.
Oh, yeah. That would have been great. I wish they had done that. That's above our pay grade, as they say.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, you guys are going to be at New York Comic Con hosting a panel.
Yeah, we're doing a couple of panels. We're doing a panel on Buffy, which is going to be on next Tuesday, October 5th at 8:45. We're doing a panel on the book. We're also doing a Star Trek panel at 7 p.m. And all the information is available on the New York Comic Con website under New York NYCC Presents. And I'll also be doing a panel on writing and producing for television with a bunch of other showrunners and writers and producers and a couple actors as well. And then we're going to be doing a big signing with Tor Books on Thursday at 2:00 for the book. And I'm going to be moderating the Dean Devlin Librarian's Bad Samaritan panel that day as well. So, yeah, they got us running ragged. We got a busy couple of days, but we're looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. It's always a pleasure to get back to New York and, be able to spend some time at the con.
New York misses you, Mark.
New York misses me. I miss New York. I mean, I love California, but boy, I'm always happy to get home.
Well, I will encourage everyone who's going to New York Comic Con to check out your panels. Now, are you guys working on any new books that you can talk about yet?
Hey, Ed, are we working on any new books that we can't talk about yet?
Well, we can say we're working on a new book. We just can't say what it is at this point.
Yeah, but hopefully we'll be able to announce it soon. It's something that we're very excited. I actually said to Ed recently that I sort of consider it the end of a trilogy. It's sort of our Return of the King. We've done Star Trek. We've done Buffy. And so this is going to hopefully close out the trilogy of legendary sci-fi franchises. But we can't say much more than that. And I'm excited about that, and then we'll see where we go from there. But it's great, and I'm looking forward to it. And I just directed a film, Can't Have You, which will come out next year, and working on some other stuff I can't talk about. But of course, Ed and I have been involved with the relaunch of Geek Magazine, which is available at Walmart, which we're excited about. And what else, Ed Gross?
I don't know. My son refers to it as the Renaissance of Ed Gross. Got all these things going between the books and Geek. And yeah, I didn't know I went anywhere, but there you go.
You got a lot going on, don't you?
There's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot going on right now.
I can tell you our next book is not about Babylon 5. I can tell you that.
No, if that was your thought, sorry.
You know.
That breaks my heart. That breaks my heart.
The problem is that even if we did that, I think about 12 people would buy it. So we just can't. We can't do it. But I agree with you. It was a wonderful show, and it really was a passion project for Joe Straczynski, who deserves so much credit for making that happen. And even after the problems of the first season, what he was able to do with the recasting, after the pilot with Bruce, who's just terrific in it, and just a wonderful cast. Lost so many people, wonderful people that were involved in that show, Richard Biggs and Michael O'Hare, and a lot of people have passed away, and it's really a shame, because it would have been nice to see that show revived in some form or fashion. Anything is fair game these days for a reboot or a reimagination, so maybe Babylon 6 isn't that far ahead.
Well, I can tell from personal experience that there are at least 3 podcasts for Babylon 5 out there running now, and that doesn't include the the Babylon 5 podcast that I hosted called Babylon Podcast that ran for 7 years, covered all of the shows, the movies, the toys, the books, everything. So there is a fan base out there. They're just sadly overlooked. So, but knowing that you guys have an appreciation for Babylon 5, I'm sure makes them happy too. So, but the...
No, absolutely. Look, I it's a show that doesn't get its due. I mean, you know, if I had to do a list of underappreciated science fiction series, you know, it would certainly be, you know, in the top 10 of that list. You know, I mean, there are a couple of shows, and Babylon 5 absolutely would belong, you know, right in the middle of that list of underappreciated science fiction shows. No question about it.
Definitely.
Excellent. Well, we will have links to the panels at New York Comic Con and to the books, Slayers and Vampires, the complete uncensored, unauthorized oral history of Buffy and Angel, is available this week in hardcover from Tor Books. We'll have links to that and to the two volumes of the 50-year mission, the unauthorized, uncensored oral histories of Star Trek, everything. Did you guys include the animated series in that too?
We did indeed.
Oh my God, awesome. There's a whole chapter on the animated series.
Awesome, awesome.
Look, there's not much in there that you will not find. If it was something to do with Star Trek, it's in those books, because and including a lot of the shows that were never made and the movies that were never made. So, you know, by the time you finish reading both books, you too will be one of the world's foremost Trek-sters.
Well, and look for the section on the 70s in Volume 1, because we really, I think it's unprecedented, the coverage we gave that 10-year period between the end of the original series and the release of Star Trek The Motion Picture. It's just like so much went on in there that paved the way for the future of Star Trek, and it's all covered in...
Yeah, I'm very proud of that. Yeah, I agree. I think that's one of the highlights of both books, is that chapter of the lost years and the 70s and the series that wasn't and the movies that weren't, and Captain Kirk fights Jesus on the bridge of the Enterprise, you know, in the God thing, and there's just so many great stories that, you know, Star Trek's that never were. So anyway, we could spend another 6 hours talking about that, but I'm not going to.
you need to save your voice for next week. So
yeah, no, we got I'm doing Entertainment Weekly Radio later today, and I don't know how I'm actually going to. I'm gonna have to sign the whole thing and handwrite, you know.
Or, which is great for radio.
It'll be like that. It'll be like in Hush. It's gonna be like in Hush. I'm gonna write it on a piece of paper and hold it up and just answer questions that way. I'll say that the gentleman stole my voice. So
okay, run out and get one of those like whiteboards and hanging around your neck right now.
Exactly. Well, Summer, thanks so much for having us. We really appreciate it.
Mark Altman. Edward Gross, thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you. Wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa. The first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award. With weekly stories from the world's best authors. Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more. With news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pohl, Wolfe, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
So, once again, if you are going to New York Comic Con, October 5th through 8th in New York City, check out the panels for Star Trek and for Buffy. Say hello to Mark and Ed. Enjoy yourselves. And check out a copy of the book, because they are fascinating retrospectives. They talk to a whole lot of people from both shows, both Buffy and Angel, and the insights and impressions after the fact really, really show what an impact this show had on not only us as fans, but also on the people who became the characters that we love. So go check that out. There are links to the books, the Buffy and Angel book and the Star Trek books, in the show notes. Check them out there. Support the show. If you buy the books from our links, we get a couple of pennies and every little bit helps. But that will do it for this episode. If you have any questions or comments, please call. The number is 602-635-6976. Leave a voicemail message, ask a question, leave a comment. I do get to them eventually. Sometimes it takes longer. Sometimes I reply right away. It just depends on what other things I have going on. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through iTunes, through Stitcher, through TuneIn, and Krypton Radio. Yes, I am working on Google Play. I don't know if SoundCloud is an option, but a lot of people seem to be getting on Spotify, so I'll look into that later. If you're listening through iTunes or on Stitcher, leave us a review there. Let people know that you're enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out too. You can follow us on Twitter, at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can follow us on YouTube and on Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi on both locations. And as always, the website, sliceofsci-fi.com. Come here, look at the movie reviews, the TV reviews, the commentary, or leave comments on the show. Leave your own reviews of reviews that we've done. Have a little fun. Maybe something we rated as 4 stars, you see is only 2.5. Let us know. That's where all the fun, geeky discussions begin, right? With a minor disagreement. If you want to follow our literary adventures, you can go on over to writersafterdark.com. Yes, the podcast over there will be starting up very soon. I think I have a suitable candidate for music, that one that I enjoy. Hopefully you guys will too. Coming soon, trust me. And we also have popculturegeeks.com, which sort of fills in the gaps left by Slice of Sci-Fi and Writers After Dark. I want to thank everybody for your pledges through Patreon. Your patronage is appreciated. Every dime you send in supports the show, helps us keep things going here. Thank you. Thank you very much. And if you're not currently a supporter and you want to help things along here, the URL to go to is patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi. That's patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi. I'd like to also send a shout out to my good friends at Sci-Fried, the geek rock band out of Orlando, who are just killing it these days. They really are kicking some major geek rock ass, and they are dropping or will soon be dropping a new album, and we will be talking to them about that, so stay tuned. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.